Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. The following is a paid program by Carl Sterling. The content of the show is that of Carl Sterling and does not represent the views of this station or iHeartMedia. Some of the information contained in this program has not been approved by the FDA, nor is it intended to diagnose, prevent, treat, or cure any diseases. Information hereafter is for general information only, and before considering anything discussed, you should contact your doctor or primary care physician.
One pill makes you larger.
Your help matters with Carl Sterling on News Radio 570 WSYR on 106.9 FM and live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
I take a couple lovers, I down a couple downers, but nothing compares to these blue and yellow purple pills.
Bring you the latest in health and wellness so you can get to the other things that matter. Here's your host, Carl Sterling.
Hello, friends. Thanks for tuning in. Really good to have you here listening today. So I appreciate all the great feedback on the past shows that we've had. It's been a wonderful experience to be able to share with you, let's say, information from, you know, world leaders in the world, thought leaders in the world of medicine and rehabilitation, to bring you education to help you live a better quality of life. In fact, that's what we're here for. So that's why we're here with another episode of Your Health Matters right here on News Radio 570 WSYR, also on 106.9 FM. And today I have a very, very special guest with me. I've been looking forward to speaking with this gentleman for actually a long time. His name is Dr. Ray Dorsey, and he's a very prominent figure in the field of neurology, specializing in Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders. He holds the position of the David M. Levy Professor of Neurology at University of Rochester. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Ray Dorsey. Ray, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Carl. Many thanks for inviting me. Many thanks for your service to the community and helping people live a higher quality of life.
Well, thank you, and thank you for what you do as well. I want to, first of all, just start by saying that I really enjoy your book. I call it Ending Parkinson's because those are the biggest letters on the cover, and it really jumps out and it stands out to me. There's a lot you talk about in this book that I'd love to share with listeners. One of the things I've talked about when I, you know, teach, and it's because I learn from people like yourself, is Parkinson's seems to be, if I'm not mistaken, maybe the fastest growing brain disorder, and we're looking at cases doubling in the last 25 years, and the projection on this doesn't look too good if we don't do something about it. And what can you share with us about this?
Yeah, so Parkinson's disease was first described in 1817, first major description in 1817 by Dr. James Parkinson. Dr. Parkinson was a 61-year-old surgeon at the time. Long been practicing medicine, and I think his father was a physician. And he said he wrote an essay when he's 61 about something new he saw on the streets of London. And he said, I'm describing a new condition. He didn't call it Parkinson's disease. He called it a shaking palsy or paralysis agitans.
Right.
And he described people who had a tremor, which had previously been described, but this tremor associated with a stoop posture, with a shuffling gait, this propensity to walk faster and faster and to fall forward, he said, was new. He said it had not been classified in the medical literature, and he was clearly concerned about it. At that time, he described six individuals with the disease. 200 years later, in 2017, the Global Burden of Disease study estimated that 6 million people had Parkinson's disease. So how do you go from something affecting six people to 6 million in the span of 200 years? It clearly can't be genetics, and it's growing far faster than would be expected by aging alone. So the central thesis of the book, the central thesis of my work today is that Parkinson's disease, the world's fastest growing brain disease, is preventable. Parkinson's disease, the vast majority of it is preventable. There's no reason that 1.2 million, million Americans need to be suffering with this debilitating and deadly disease. There's no reason that 200 Americans need to be diagnosed with the disease today. There's no reason that 100 people with Parkinson's disease need to die today. We can prevent Parkinson's disease for future generations and give the world in the future a world that where Parkinson's disease is increasingly rare, not increasingly common.
Well, that sounds good to me. I mean, it's really, you know better than I do, but we're seeing all stages of Parkinson's here, quality of life affected, not just for the person living with it, but caregivers, family, coworkers, friends. To what degree, if you're able to estimate this, to what degree do you think environmental factors might play a role? And is there a combo, let's say a combination factor of a genetic predisposition to a mutation as, let's say, a result of a long-term exposure to a toxin or something like that? Paraquat, that would be a good example.
I think overwhelmingly, the vast majority of Parkinson's disease is environmental. I think the vast majority of Parkinson's disease has very little to do with genetics. And the vast majority of people get Parkinson's disease because they're exposed to environmental toxicants in their food, water, and air. If you're not exposed to these toxicants in your food, water, and air, you're not going to develop Parkinson's disease.
Okay.
So just a few minutes, a few words on genetics. So we know that about 15% of people with Parkinson's disease carry a genetic risk factor for the disease. There's one called mutations in a gene called Parkin that those mutations alone are sufficient to cause the disease. That accounts for about 1 or 2% of people with Parkinson's disease. Said another way, 98 to 99% of people with Parkinson's disease, as far as we know, if they that genetic factors are insufficient to cause the disease. Another 10 to 15% carry a genetic risk factor for the disease, the most common of which is a mutation in a gene called LRRK2. That carries a risk, lifetime risk of 30 to 40%. The other most common one is even more common than that, is a mutation in a gene called GBA, which if you carry it, increases your lifetime risk of developing the disease is 10%. So we know that for 85% of people don't carry any of these genetic risk factors and have no underlying known predisposition to developing Parkinson's disease. We've known for over 100 years since Sir William Gowers, a British neurologist who wrote the Bible of Neurology, he said, of all my patients with Parkinson's disease, only 15% of them have a family history of the disease. Today, only 15% of people have a family history of the disease. So we know overwhelming that this is a environmentally determined disease. We've known that from research done in twins. We've known that from works done by Dr. Caroline Tanner at UC San Francisco for the last 40 years. So if it is due to environmental factors, what are those environmental factors? Well, I said it's food, water, and air. So I think it's certain pesticides, including a pesticide called paraquat. Over 30 countries, really maybe over 50 countries, including China, have banned this pesticide. But the United States has not. This weed killer is sprayed on fields in Syracuse. It's sprayed on weeds in Rochester, New York, where I live, sprayed throughout the United States. It's sprayed on corn, cotton, and vineyards. Second is in our water. One of the most common water contaminants is a dry cleaning and degreasing chemical called trichloroethylene. I have a little motto. I have it up here. Many of your listeners know that water is made up of three atoms, H2O, two hydrogens and oxygens. Trichloroethylene is made up of six atoms, two carbon atoms in black, one hydrogen atom in white, and three chlorine atoms in green, hence its name trichloroethylene. This is contaminated thousands of sites throughout the United States. Many of your listeners have seen ads for Camp Lejeune because Camp Lejeune was contaminated with this chemical between 1953 and 1987, exposing 1 million Marines, their family members, and civilians to this cancer-causing chemical, which is associated with a 500% increased risk of developing Parkinson's disease. And then the final thing is our air, and increasing research links air pollution, little tiny pieces of dirt and soot in the air, to Parkinson's disease, and even more concerning and stronger link to Alzheimer's disease.
So I just got a comment real quick. My son did his MD and PhD at Hershey Penn State. And during his PhD, he was studying degenerative brain disorders. His mentor, Dr. Shumei Wang, a neurologist, I don't know if you know her or not, but because there are a lot of neurologists, but she ran three studies I was a part of. One of them was a paraquat study. It's very interesting because the people working in the as pesticide applicators, well, they have a higher percentage of Parkinson's, as well as the welders. The manganese sulfate, I believe, might have been the main ingredient there, the spinoff from welding. So I was in two welder studies as a control subject because I've never welded and never done agricultural work, but very interesting. Yeah.
So let's talk about paraquat. So Dr. Caroline Tanner, over 10 years ago, did a study showing that farmers who were exposed to paraquat didn't have a 10% increase, not a 15, not a 50%, but a 150% increased risk of developing Parkinson's. Farmers exposed to paraquat have a 150% increased risk of developing Parkinson's disease. Paraquat is not new, it's not cutting edge technology. Yeah. It was developed in the 1950s.
Right.
So few people would drive in a car or fly in an airplane from the 1950s, but we still allow a weed killer from the 1950s to be sprayed on farms in Western New York. This pesticide is so toxic, it kills the weeds that Roundup can't.
Yeah.
It's been used to commit homicide and suicide. The EPA's own website says one sip can kill. The EPA's own website says one sip can kill. Yet last month, the EPA allowed for continued use of paraquat in upstate New York and throughout the United States.
Let me, mind blowing. We have to head out to a break just for a couple of minutes, folks. So we'll be back with Dr. Ray Dorsey, University of Rochester, after this short break. Thank you. All right. I have to tell you what you were just saying there before this commercial break, this last one. That is, that's frightening to even think that they're telling us this information, yet it's still okay to use that stuff when it's really not okay. Frightening. I wonder, why do you think that is?
Well, there was a great piece in The Guardian, a British investigative journal, like the equivalent of Frontline. And there have been farmers who have developed Parkinson's disease after working with paraquat, and they've sued the manufacturer. It turned out, according to The Guardian, they've reviewed legal documents as part of those court cases. And they found that the manufacturer of paraquat fed paraquat to mice, to rats, and to rabbits, and they all developed clinical or pathological features of Parkinson's disease. Oh. The chemical company did these experiments on rats, mice, and rabbits, according to The Guardian, in the 1960s.
Oh.
So that's before I was born. That's over 50 years the chemical company has known that their pesticide, when fed to laboratory animals, three mammalian species, produces the features of Parkinson's disease. According to The Guardian, did they seek to withdraw their product? No. Did they seek to introduce a safer alternative? No. They sought to double down on their blockbuster product and engage in a freedom to sell campaign. And that freedom to sell campaign has resulted in paraquat being sprayed on fields throughout the world, except in the countries that have banned it. Until recently, the three countries, according to the Global Burden of Disease Study, that had the highest rates of Parkinson's disease were the United States, Canada, and Argentina. And until, I believe, 2022, paraquat was being sprayed in all three of those countries.
Oh, man. That's disturbing, to say the least.
And so this is a campaign. We wrote a piece highlighting that this is we've seen this before. So we the tobacco company did the same thing. They used to advertise that tobacco was healthy, that you would have doctors like me be in advertisements talking about the health benefits of cigarettes. We've seen the same thing with lead paint. Used to have children being advertised, being used in promotions to extol the benefits of lead-based paint.
Yeah.
These are all my friend and colleague, Professor Amit Ray at Rochester Institute of Technology said, Ray, this is agnotology. And I was like, what in the world is agnotology? And he goes, Ray, agnotology is the deliberate production of ignorance, often for commercial gain. Science, ideally, is the production of knowledge, ideally for the public's good. Agnotology is the opposite. Agnotology is the production of ignorance, often for commercial gain. And I think we've seen this play out with tobacco. We've seen this play out with leaded paint. We've seen this play out with the opioid crisis. We see this playing out with social media. And I think we're seeing this play out with paraquat. This is a deliberate, agnotology is a deliberate production of ignorance so that people like you and me, and I wasn't aware of the, I had no idea about these experiments that the company allegedly was doing in the 1960s. These are deliberate production of ignorance. So we're left in the dark. We're seeing shadows like, you know, Plato's cave. You know, we're seeing those shadows, and we should be really, really concerned if we're seeing shadows when it comes to paraquat, if we're seeing shadows when it comes to social media, when we see shadows in smoking, what else are we seeing shadows of? And what are other environmental intoxicants that are contributing not just to Parkinson's, but what other brain diseases, to what other cancers? Because there's a reason that life expectancy in the United States today is less than when it was when I was in medical school. It's less, even though we're smoking less, and even though we spend 50% more on healthcare today than we did when I was in medical school, and life expectancy is less. There are reasons why these our health is worse than it has, and I think we need to look and see what's in our environment that's contributing to disease and disability.
Is disturbing as it is to hear this, I am grateful that you're sharing this information, because so many will not share this information. And I'm talking not to diss anyone in the medical community or the neurology community, but they won't talk about it or they won't acknowledge it. And this drives me absolutely nuts, because we know a lot of this stuff is being suppressed. I'm not a conspiracy theorist kind of guy, but this is not a conspiracy. This is an actual thing that's happening that's being squashed down.
Listen, I don't think you need to be polite to physicians and researchers. I mean, who's accountable for the rise in Parkinson's disease? If we have a rise in disease, isn't it incumbent on people like me to figure out why it is?
Absolutely.
Isn't that why, you know, we're called doctors?
Yeah.
Isn't this why we give credence and respect to physicians and scientists? Because they're supposed to dedicate their time and energies and efforts not only caring for people with the disease, but finding why these diseases increase in their prevalence. We saw in the span in response to the recent COVID-19 pandemic, there were great scientists who did great things to come up with a vaccine that have prevented millions of people from developing COVID and allowed us to resume a life where we can interact with one another in person. You know, I don't take pride in the fact that it's on my watch that the number of people with Parkinson's disease has doubled, right? That means that my colleagues and I are failing in some way, that the status quo is not working. We need to come up with new ways to address Parkinson's disease, new ways to address Alzheimer's disease, new ways to address ALS, because there are reasons why people get these diseases. Maybe it's genetic in some cases, but likely in only a small minority, but there are environmental factors in our food, water, and air that are driving the rise of Parkinson's disease, likely driving the rise of Alzheimer's disease, driving ALS, intellectual disabilities, autism, brain cancer, and we need to figure out what those are and protect the public from those harmful effects.
Well, with that said, we just need more doctors like you, doctor, because you're one of the ones who's taking those initiatives forward. You're putting out the information. You wrote the book. It's a beautiful book. By the way, listeners, it's called, actually, I don't have the full title with me, Ending Parkinson's. Thank you. Ending Parkinson's Disease, A Prescription for Action, Ending Parkinson's Disease. And I've read it more than once. I have the printed version, the audio version, because I learn better on audio. And then if I really like something, I buy the printed. So a lot of highlights in my printed version. We're going to talk about this when we come back from a break. I have a little more talking to do here for a second before we go to break. Funding and policies. I want to hit that when we come back from a short break. And the PACT of the Prevent, Advocate, Care, and Treat. Before we go out to a break, we got about 1 minute left. Would you be willing to share your opinion on exercise? And for example, we know it's good for us. Is it something that people with Parkinson's should be doing? I mean, I know the answer, but I want our listeners to know what you think about this, because I think it's so relevant and important and then not emphasized enough.
Yeah, so Sir William Gowers, the father of modern, who wrote the Bible of Neurology in the late 1800s, said that the life of people with Parkinson's disease should be quiet and restful, and he was wrong. So people with Parkinson's disease should be exercising and loud and make their voices heard and sweat a little bit. So we have increasing evidence that exercise is beneficial to people with Parkinson's disease and is associated with a decreased risk of ever developing the disease. So if you have Parkinson's disease, you should be physically active to the extent you can. I routinely recommend my patients exercise at least an hour a day if they could. And I said, if I had Parkinson's disease, I would exercise 2 hours a day. And anything from walking, yoga, Tai Chi, ballroom dancing, swimming, cycling, boxing without getting your head hit, sure, have all been shown to be a benefit in studies. And there are lots of things that people with Parkinson's disease can do to have a higher quality of life today.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, doctor. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes after a news break here. You're listening to Your Health Matters right here on News Radio 570 WSYR, also on 106.9 FM. And we'll be back after. Okay, folks, and we're back with Dr. Ray Dorsey, University of Rochester neurologist. We're talking about Parkinson's disease. We're also talking about his wonderful book, A Prescription for Action, Ending Parkinson's Disease. I highly recommend buy it. Okay, learn about this. In the book, Dr. Dorsey talks about a pact for action, all right? Prevent, advocate, care, and treat. Please, doctor, let's talk about this.
Sure. So just a quick thing on buying the book. If you can afford the book, buy it. Fantastic. All the authors are donating all of our proceeds to prevent and end Parkinson's disease. If you can't afford a copy of the book, you can just email us info@endingpd.org. info@endingpd.org with your name and address, and we'll send you a copy for free.
Oh, wow. That I got to jump in. I don't know anyone who does that other than you. Thank you. For those, you know, there are a lot of people out there, this might be too much, but it's not anymore. Send that email, folks. All right, let's talk about PACT.
info@endingpd.org. My shout out to my outstanding assistant, Rini Marcel, who mails out all the books.
And she's amazing, by the way. She helped us put this together. Thank you, Rini. Thank you.
So the PACT is PACT is what can we do to prevent, advocate, care, and treat people with treat Parkinson's disease. So the first step to any pandemic, to any crisis, whether it's a fire or a disease, is to contain it and to prevent people who are unaffected from ever developing the disease. And we failed to do that. We have failed to prevent Parkinson's disease. Paraquat, as we indicated, is still permitted in the United States, even though China has banned it. Not only is it sprayed on farms in Western New York, it's sprayed in increasing amounts. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the data for the most data that most current data they have, the amount of paraquat sprayed in the United States has doubled in the last 5 years. Oh, so man. England's banned it, but they export it to Brazil, Mexico, and the United States, and we spray it on our farms in Western New York, and I think along with it, the seeds of future cases of Parkinson's disease. So we need to prevent the disease.
Are these like planes, what do they call those, the crop dusters?
Yeah, so you know, lots of your listeners, I grew up on farms in Western New York in the area, and those crop dusters are spraying nerve toxins. Many of these pesticides are nerve toxins. That's how they work. And people who inhale certain of these pesticides, not all pesticides are linked to Parkinson's disease, but certain ones like paraquat are likely exposing themselves to an increased risk of Parkinson's disease. Second thing is advocacy. People need to make their voices heard. The only way diseases change their course is when people who are most directly affected by the disease make their voices heard. Many of your older listeners will remember the March of Dimes began in 1938 when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who had polio, was in office, and polio in the 30s and 40s crippled a nation. It closed community centers, closed houses of worship, closed swimming pools because people were afraid of the paralysis that would result. And in 1938, people started mailing in dimes to the White House. They mailed in so many dimes that one, the White House no longer lets you mail in dimes. Two, they nearly shut down the mail room for the White House. And today, the dime, if you look at it, a dime, it has a picture of Franklin Delano Roosevelt on it.
Right.
That raised millions of dollars. And 17 years after the March of Dimes began, Jonas Salk announced a vaccine in Pittsburgh that has led to the near disappearance of polio.
Right.
We have no cures for polio. We have no highly effective treatments for polio. We just live in a world that's largely free of polio because ordinary Americans mailed in dimes to the White House, raised money to develop a vaccine to prevent people from ever developing the disease. in the 1980s, we were confronted with a virus that was unknown and that was uniformly and rapidly fatal. We had no strong federal response. In the absence of that, the late Larry Kramer and his colleagues in New York City and colleagues in New York and San Francisco formed an organization called ACT UP. And ACT UP had a motto of silence equals death, because for people who were affected with HIV, silence did equal death.
Yeah.
And they made their voices heard. They made us, quite frankly, uncomfortable. There were doctors and hospitals who refused to care for people with HIV. People with this unknown disease were blamed for developing the disease themselves, even though it was completely unknown.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the course of the disease. ACT UP was formed in 1987. 8 years later, 1995, we had protease inhibitors, which allowed people with HIV to live a near normal life expectancy. Near normal life expectancy for HIV. Yeah. A simple intervention called a condom was found to be highly effective at preventing people from developing HIV. You, me, your listeners, some of us don't have HIV because of the heroism of people like Larry Kramer, who formed ACT UP. In the span of 8 years, we went from a disease that was uniformly and rapidly fatal to one that was both preventable and treatable.
Yeah, huge advances in that. Huge.
And just one more example. In 1980, a 12-year-old girl was struck by a drunk driver, knocked from out of her shoes as she was walking. And 4 days later, her mother, Candace Leitner, who's still living, Candace Leitner, began lobbying legislators and I think the governor of California, Jerry Brown, to make drinking and driving illegal. In 1980, drinking and driving was legal in some states in the United States. In 1980, mm-hmm. drinking and driving was legal in some states in the United States. 8 years later, drinking and driving is illegal in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. The drinking age is raised from 18 to 21. Drinking, the blood alcohol level is dropped to 0.08. Today, mm-hmm. every year, 10,000 fewer people die from drinking and driving because of the work of Mothers yeah. Against Drunk yeah. Driving. 10,000, that's 10,000, you know, we're coming up, you know, in graduation, that's 10,000 schools that aren't torn apart, 10,000 yeah. communities that are not torn apart, 10,000 families that are not torn apart because of the heroism of people like Candace Leitner. If we prevent these things from ever happening, and she didn't say we need better emergency rooms or better trauma centers or spinal cord rehab, she just said we need to stop drinking and driving. If we address the root causes of disease, whether it's polio, whether it's HIV, or whether it's drinking and driving, we can all live longer, healthier, and safer lives.
So the theme here, and I'm really appreciate you sharing this because the way you're voicing it now, it really, really stands out to me how important the advocacy is for better policies. You know, FDR, Larry Kramer, Candace Leitner, and what has happened as a result with AIDS, polio, and then drinking and driving. Before we head out to one more break, I was, maybe this is Carolyn Tanner, Dr. Tanner. I can't remember. I was at WPC, World Parkinson Congress, 2016, Portland, Oregon. And I was at a presentation where somebody was talking about, and I'm backpedaling a little here back to Paraquat, but they were talking about a large scale Southern California, I believe, Paraquat study that studied, a community near a big farming place where crop dusters were dusting, but the wind would generally blow in a certain way. And then the toxins would generally blow in the wind to this community, got into water and all this other stuff, breathing it, ingesting it. And if I remember correctly, and I don't know the name of the study, but this is a real problem for that community with a lot more Parkinson's than usual in any other community. And it looks like you might be familiar with that study.
Yeah, I don't know, that's a bigger study, but it's not just farmers who are at risk. So just living in a rural area, especially the people who drink well water, is not regulated by the Safe Drinking Water Act. Their wells can often be shallow, can be contaminated by nearby farms. And so we know people who drink well water have a 75% increased risk of developing Parkinson's. Right. In addition, people who live in rural areas could be exposed to airborne pesticides. So pesticides can be both inhaled and they can be ingested. And I think depending on the way, whether it's inhalation or ingestion, both can lead to Parkinson's disease, sure. likely a different constellation of symptoms, but big risks for people who just simply live in rural areas and who aren't even engaged in farming.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really good to know. All right, we're going to head out for the last break here. We have with us Dr. Ray Dorsey, University of Rochester. Again, I'm going to repeat, go buy the book, Ending Parkinson's Disease, Dr. Ray Dorsey. And we're going to have in the notes section here where you can email if buying the book is not possible for you for any reason. They're going to send you a copy. You're listening to Your Health Matters, News Radio 570, WSYR, also on 106.9. Okay, we're back for the final quarter hour here with Dr. Ray Dorsey. We're talking about Parkinson's disease today, folks, and very, very, very relevant information here from Dr. Dorsey. We were talking about PACT. So before the break, we were talking about PREVENT. So PACT, right? Prevent, advocate. Doctor, let's talk about care and treat, please.
Yeah, so 1.2 million Americans have Parkinson's disease, yet only 10% of them see a Parkinson's specialist. Only about 10% of people with Parkinson's disease in the United States see a Parkinson's specialist.
I had no idea.
Like you or a colleague. And only in 40% of people, Medicare beneficiaries with Parkinson's disease, 40% do not see a neurologist of any kind, not even just a general neurologist who cares for people with a wide range of brain diseases. 40% of that don't, and those that don't are more likely to fracture their hip, more likely to be placed in a skilled nursing facility, more likely to die. So we have people, preventable disability and preventable death likely attributed to the lack of access to care. So we need to come up with better ways to care for people with Parkinson's disease. My colleagues and Dr. Kevin Biglin and I worked on telemedicine to bring care to patients instead of patients to care. We saw how powerful telemedicine could be in the COVID-19 pandemic for a whole generation of younger Americans. It's likely to be their preferred way of receiving care for some conditions. We need to make sure that that's increasingly available, that anyone anywhere in the United States or quite frankly around the world can receive care for Parkinson's disease, because Parkinson's disease is highly treatable. People can live, you know, productive lives. We've seen people, Rich Clifford walked in space after he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Brian Grant likely played an NBA season while he had Parkinson's disease. We've seen senators serve in the Senate with Parkinson's disease. We've seen congressmen serve in Congress with Parkinson's disease. We've seen attorney generals serve in the cabinet with Parkinson's disease. We've seen people like Michael J. Fox write not one, not two, but three books and star in multiple TV shows. Yes. Since developing Parkinson's disease. So people with Parkinson's disease can live long and productive lives, and we need to make sure they receive adequate care to do so. In addition, those 1.2 million Americans, including many of our listeners, are looking for better treatments. And we haven't given them any therapeutic breakthroughs this century. The most effective medication for Parkinson's disease is a medication called levodopa. It was developed in the 1960s, widely available in the U.S. since the 70s. And then for some individuals, a highly effective treatment is deep brain stimulation. That was also developed last century. No major therapeutic breakthroughs for Parkinson's disease this century. It means suggests the status quo is not working. We need new ways of looking at the disease and also need to adopt a greater orientation toward prevention, because of every Parkinson's research dollar, only 2 cents goes to prevention. And if every Parkinson's research dollar, only 2 cents goes to prevention. If we don't invest in prevention, we're just going to make sure that more and more people develop Parkinson's disease in the future. More and more people are exposed to paraquat. More and more people are exposed to dry cleaning chemicals like trichloroethylene. More and more people will be exposed to air pollution. But if we invest more in prevention, if we find our voice, if we engage in activism, we can create a world where Parkinson's disease is increasingly rare, not increasingly common. Just like we live in a world free of polio, we live in a world free of typhus, of yellow fever, of many smallpox, many other diseases, you know, that are in the history books. And we want to put Parkinson's disease in the history books instead of on the front pages of the newspapers.
This is really like I have in my notes here, a call to collective action. We really collectively, we can all make a difference. If we get on that same page, make our voices heard. Doctor, I have to tell you, I was looking forward to talking with you so much, and I'm so grateful for the time you're taking today, because I know you're really busy. But not only that, you're offering telemedicine all over the world. People don't do that, what you do. I just have to say, I'm really have such great respect for your work and that you actually care. because I'm not sure that every doctor cares.
No, they do care. Listen, you don't do 10 years of training after college if you don't care. I mean, vast majority of people that are in medicine care, but we operate in a system that has been failing. You know, we spend one fifth of our GDP, one out of every $5 of GDP is spent on healthcare, yet life expectancy in the United States is lower than it was when I was in medical school. Yeah. Life expectancy in the United States is 5 years lower than it is in France. Clearly, we're not doing a lot of things right. We should stop embracing the status quo. We should recognize that we need change, dramatic change in the way we deliver healthcare, and we need dramatic change in terms of addressing the root causes of diseases. These diseases like diabetes, congestive heart failure, heart disease, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, all have huge preventable components, and many of them may be fundamentally preventable. We can live in a world without these diseases, just like we live in a world without polio, without smallpox, without typhus, without yellow fever. We can do the same thing for these brain diseases, from autism to Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, I love that. So we have a little time left. I'm curious to know two things. Number one, regarding exercise, is there any particular thing you recommend that would have the most benefits? For example, you know, people talk about BDNF, creation by an elevated heart rate. And then the other thing is, do you have a final takeaway message before we end the show? Let's talk about exercise. Anything in particular you think is best?
So it appears that exercise that makes you sweat, make sure talk to your physician, make sure you're in good enough shape to sweat, but sure, hopefully you are. That you sweat, so that raising heart rate. So we know for people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s that vigorous exercise, the equivalent to 3.5 hours a week of swimming or running, is associated with a 20% lower risk of developing the disease. So one nice easy thing you can do: sweat. I biked into work today, so I got a little bit of sweat, and I'm trying to decrease my risk of developing Parkinson's disease. And then for people with the disease, it appears to be the same thing, that vigorous exercise releases growth factors in the brain that protect these nerve cells, many of which have already died off. So if you had nerve cells that die off, you want to protect the ones that you have. So exercise is a great way to do that. And then likely, just like for smoking and lung cancer, if your smoker gets diagnosed with lung cancer, the first thing is to stop smoking. If you have Parkinson's, you should be limiting your exposure to toxicants, especially avoiding pesticides. Buy organic, wash your fruits and vegetables. Be careful what's used on your lawn and lawns next to you.
Sure.
Put a water filter on your water, like I use one from Pure Brita. And then, you know, if you live in an area of the country with high degrees of air pollution, an air filter could be a useful thing to decrease your exposure to toxicants in your air.
Beautiful. Actually, all that sounds like a great takeaway, but do you have any other takeaways for us before we head out?
I can't think of, I'm a neurologist, right? And what's the best thing that a physician can do is the best thing a physician can do is to create a world where their disease is increasingly rare. What a great thing for Jonas Salk to give us a world largely free of polio. What a great gift that Candace Leitner has given us, where 10,000 fewer people die a year from drinking and driving, where drinking and driving is socially unacceptable. What a great gift Larry Kramer and his colleagues have given us, where rates of HIV is decreasing. HIV may disappear as a major clinical entity in our lifetime. These are gifts we've received from previous generations. You have an obligation to receive, and you have an obligation to reciprocate. And I think what we should be thinking about in our generation is creating a world where diseases like Parkinson's disease are increasingly rare, so that people don't have to suffer the death, disability, and disabling features of this terrible condition.
Well, I appreciate that so much. Doctor, thank you so much again for your time. Really appreciate you taking this time and sharing with us. This is very enlightening for me. Your perspective on this is very enlightening for me. I learned a lot today. Thank you.
Thank you. And if your listeners have questions or they have stories, I love stories. If they work with Paraquat or other pesticides and have thoughts about its harmful effects or not harmful effects, they can just email me at info@endingpd.org, info@endingpd.org. And if they can't afford a copy of the book, just mail us your name and mailing address, and we'll send you a copy, our book, Ending Parkinson's Disease. All the authors are donating all their proceeds to efforts to prevent and end this terrible disease.
That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Well, thank you again. And I want to thank our audience for listening. We have some very large and loyal listener base, for which I am truly grateful. And You're listening to Your Health Matters, News Radio 570 WSYR, also on 106.9 FM. My name is Carl Sterling. I am absolutely thrilled to be your host because every week we're talking about longevity and exploring that journey towards a longer and healthier life. Have a great week, everybody. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.